Guys, last episode, you guys told me that you went and saw 21 Jump Street. And you said that it was like, well, Melanie, I think your quote was, you went to the movie theater thinking that you were better than everybody else that was there. Like, you were of the opinion that you weren't there because you wanted to see the movie so much as you were there because, you could see a movie, and this was the one you happened to be seeing, but you were still better than all of the other people there who presumably did want to see the movie.
Yes.
And then you guys sort of convinced me that this was better than it seemed on paper or in the preview.
Oh, no. Did you go see it?
And I went and saw it. And I went and saw it with Mom and Gary.
Oh, okay.
And it ended up, you guys pretty much nailed it on the head. It was like 10 times funnier than it looked in the preview.
I'm glad you actually liked it. I was like, oh, no.
No, yeah, I thought it was hilarious, and Channing Tatum was really funny in it too, which was unexpected for me. So
yeah,
guys out there, I know it looks like a really stupid movie, but if you haven't seen it yet, you should go see it. It's really funny, even though like half of the jokes are dick jokes, and it has a pretty raunchy dick joke at the very end. But. And I guess the other half of the jokes are like drugs, or alcohol related, but it's still really funny. And there's kind of a clever, if somewhat obvious, chase scene joke too. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's another endorsement for 21 Jump Street. You should go out and see it. The next movie that I watched this with Lauren in the theaters, was The Hunger Games, and I understand that you guys saw this too.
Yes.
So, Josh, have you read the books?
Yeah.
Okay, so everyone here has read the books and seen the movie. So what did you guys think?
I thought it was great. Like, we went the day, well, we went like the Friday that it came out, but not to like a midnight showing or anything. But I had been looking at like friends, like Facebook feeds to see if people liked it or not. And so before we went, only a few of my friends had seen it and the response seemed really positive. And then we went, and then like later that night, almost everyone else on my Facebook was like, it was a terrible adaptation and it was awful.
Really?
Yeah, but I thought it was really great, and I thought like it stuck to the book in all of the ways that mattered. But I thought it was like, I'm glad that they didn't get bogged down with a lot of other stuff that happens in the book that doesn't happen in the movie. So
yeah, like describing clothes for like 3 pages,
right?
Or describing how something tastes for a page.
Yeah,
I think that's something that's like in a movie that's. That's something that you can just show. Like, you know what they say, a picture is worth 1,000 words, and 24 pictures per second. you can get a lot of description in there, so.
Exactly.
I thought Elizabeth Banks was really great in it as Effie.
I don't know who Elizabeth Banks is.
She's the one who plays the, like, the one who reads all the names.
Oh, yeah, I know who Effie is.
Yeah,
Elizabeth Banks was in Scrubs, and she's in 30 Rock recently.
And she was in that movie. Scrubs? Yeah.
She was JD's girlfriend who got pregnant.
She's blonde.
At the very end.
Oh, the blonde, sort of emotionally cold one.
yeah, that's basically her character in all of everything.
I was gonna say she's kind of emotionally cold in 30 Rock also.
yeah, she is. She's been in a couple of movies lately too.
Yeah,
her performance was good. I thought all the performances were pretty good. I really liked Woody Harrelson as
I liked him too.
Yeah,
as whatever his name was, Harold
Haymitch.
Haymitch. I was about to say Hagrid, but I knew that wasn't right.
Yeah.
yeah, I thought he had a really good performance. I wasn't expecting was it Donald Sutherland?
Yeah,
as President Snow. But I thought he was okay, even though Snow didn't really get a big piece of time in this movie.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that the movie was pretty much almost one for one what happened in the book, with the exception of like two sort of small, like insignificant things.
Yeah.
So I don't know why anyone could possibly say that it wasn't a good adaptation.
Yeah, I was confused by that too. I don't know. I guess people maybe expect something different from an adaptation, like that it's going to be exactly the same, but that's not the way I approach movies. Like, they're totally different things, and so you can't expect them to be the same.
Yeah.
So, Melanie was telling me some of the complaints people had were like, you know, it's not that hard to do a voiceover so you can hear what people are thinking. Because the book is in first person, so you get a lot of her thoughts, which you don't get literally in the movie, but like that's the worst move possible.
Yeah, I think that's like super lazy storytelling. If you
right?
have to
that's what
like
I think
if
too.
You have to get the emotion across that the main character is feeling by having her read a script and then superimpose that onto the movie soundtrack.
Yeah.
That's just terrible. That means that you didn't pick somebody who could act,
who can act
to,
well.
To
yeah.
play the main character.
Well, if you compare it to the first Twilight movie, which does have the voiceover, there's one part when she pulls into the high school and she says something like, first day of high school, and then her truck backfires and she goes, great. It's like, what does great add? You know, like, why do you need that in voiceover?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a good enough director or editor, you can bring out the emotion that the actor was feeling just by giving them some direction, or the actor themselves can supply that in, you know, the way they're acting. Or
yeah, right.
You can have like some sort of musical or audio cue that brings about that feeling. You don't have to have somebody like physically telling you exactly like what their emotion is at that time.
Yeah.
Right. I think one of the other big differences that I thought was a really good move was that, you know, the movie opens with Seneca Crane, the game maker, being interviewed by, what's his face? What's the guy's name?
Oh, I don't remember. Blue-haired guy?
Stanley. Yeah, the blue-haired guy. The, like, host or
Caesar
whatever.
Caesar something? Caesar.
Yeah, Caesar Flickerman. So it opens with, like, their little interview, and then periodically throughout the games, Caesar and the other guy, Claudius, sort of like jump in to be like, in case you didn't know what a tracker jacker was, and sort of like, and then they sort of like explain it, and presumably that's for the audience watching the Hunger Games, but it's like also helpful to
audience. That was a smart thing to do. Like, it would have been really stupid if like, if Katniss and Rue were like sitting in a tree, like having a conversation about about the history of tracker jackers,
right?
So and that's the kind of thing, without having like a 4 or 5 hour movie, you can't get that information in the way that's delivered in the book,
right?
And honestly, you don't really need it that badly. Like, if they didn't explain what tracker jackers were, you would still understand these are some sort of wasp and they can kill you and cause you to hallucinate.
I think part of the problem, though, I think it was good that they explained it in the movie. I think it was really good that they explained it the way they did. But the wasps in the movie didn't look any different from normal wasps, other than like the huge nest that they had. So I think it would have been like difficult to get the point across that these were like genetically engineered super wasps if they hadn't said something. But if they had like made these like giant like computer animated wasps or something, then maybe that would have gotten the point across without them having to explain it. But yeah, the way they did it was definitely good enough. So
yeah, but I think people just get too like they get too wrapped up in the book version, which is really like everybody's book version except for what's explicitly on the page is different because you have a different imagination. So you have to understand that, like, for somebody to capture exactly what you imagined is going to be pretty much impossible without your input, you know?
Yeah, right. Unless you made the movie yourself.
Right. I mean, like, people get hung up on, like, who got cast in different roles and stuff, and it's like, really? Like, unless they're a bad actor, I don't see the point in being upset about that.
So, my idea of the characters, like, in my imagination, yeah, that's right. Like, most of the characters that I saw didn't look anything like what I had actually pictured them.
Right.
With the exception of PETA. I don't know why. I just imagined him looking almost exactly like that.
Really?
Which Lauren totally disagreed. She was like, I thought that... She said something like, I thought he was supposed to be, like, cuter. and all I could think of was like, no, I'm pretty sure that his description in the book was not like that he was like this heartthrob like character. Right. I thought that he was supposed to be kind of a like chunky, not like chunky, but like husky kind of guy with like a good smile, and those were sort of like the defining characteristics that I thought. And I thought the person, whoever it was that played that part, pretty much fit exactly with what I thought in my head. But Lauren was expecting someone cuter, I guess.
Well, I think that if you read those books, if you read any of those books, like, if you feel invested in the potential, like, romance angle of them, you're probably going to picture somebody that, like, you would be attracted to.
Sure. You know? So, I don't want to get into spoiler territory since only the first movie has come out.
Right.
But the way I pictured him as not being, like, super hot,
yeah,
sort of made me disappointed with, well, never mind. I think I probably just spoil it a lot. But I'll just say that that I was disappointed with sort of the ending of the series. Should I cut this whole thing out?
No,
I don't think the last part I just talked about.
I don't think you gave away anything too obvious.
I know that Mom is reading she just finished the first book.
Right.
So I would hate to, well, I guess that's sort of a major plot point, right?
I don't know what we're talking about anymore.
I feel like the more we talk about it, then we will end up giving something away.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's stop talking about The Hunger Games. I think we all kind of agreed that it was a good movie.
Yeah.
And I think it did the book justice, which for me, I didn't think it was like the world's greatest book to begin with,
right.
But it was good enough that it kept me interested. It made me want to read straight through to the end of the trilogy.
Yeah.
And I think the movie did a really good job of capturing what the books were about. I had one more thing in the land of entertainment that I wanted to talk about, and that is a downloadable video game called Journey. This is something that's sort of, I think it's exclusive to the PlayStation 3, so unfortunately, yeah, it hasn't gotten out to as many people as I hope finally get to experience it one day. But this game is sort of unlike almost any other game I've ever played. It's made by a company called That Game Company, whose previous titles were a game called Flow, which was like almost like a Petri dish simulator, where you're sort of this, you start off as like a single-celled organism, and you start like eating things, and then you become bigger and sort of more complex. And then if you get eaten by something else, you sort of fall back down a layer, you get smaller. The whole purpose of this game, I think, was to see in video game design if there was a way to sort of naturally let the player choose the moments of sort of peril versus moments of like jubilation, I guess.
Okay.
Basically, the sort of natural chemical responses that happen in your brain, the sort of feedback loop of like, I did something, I got rewarded for it, or I did something wrong and I got punished for it. Sort of seeing if you could put those moments in the player's control instead of in the game designer's control.
Okay.
Their next game was a game called Flower, where this is going to have like sort of a really weird, like esoteric description. But basically, you play the wind, and the purpose of this is you have to sort of guide this flower petal around, and as you touch other flowers, they bloom and add their petals to your like wind. So by the time you get through like the end of a level, you have like this trail of flower petals in your wind that's like 100 feet long or whatever. And this is less of a, I mean, it's less of a game than it is an experience. Like, the whole point of this is you sort of, you go through these, it's like 6 or 7 levels, and it starts off and you're like in an open field. And it's got this kind of cool music where every time you like touch a flower, it sets off a note, and they set the flowers in such a way that you'll hit like 20 of them in a row. And so you'll get like a little jingle. Mm-hmm. But you start off with like an open field, and then it moves on to like a place where there's like windmills blowing. So you get like a little more like man-made features there. And then finally you get into a place that's like kind of dark, where it's like electrical power grids and stuff. And you can sort of like, the whole point of the game is going from like the natural world into like the man-made world, where it's sort of like exploiting nature. And then at the very end, you're sort of overcoming man's exploitation of nature by sort of sending things back to a more natural time,
mm-hmm.
Or a more natural setting,
mm-hmm.
Which is really weird for a video game. Like, there's no combat in this at all. Like, the entire point of this game is to just sort of fly around in the world and explore and just sort of admire the feeling of flying around through this natural world. So their most recent game just came out last week. It's called Journey, and this game is sort of along the same lines of the first two games in that it's not a traditional game where you're just like shooting things or attacking things or being violent in any way. You are this sort of desert dweller. It starts off, you're like, you start off on a sand dune, and in the distance you can see this mountain with like this big beam of light kind of shooting out of it. And that's, you're not really told that you're supposed to go there or try to make your way over to it. That's just sort of implied, since everything around you is like a desert wasteland. Right. And along the way, you sort of discover these creatures that are made out of like sort of a magical cloth. Is the best way to describe it. And these sort of recharge your own cloth that you're wearing. And once that's recharged, you have the ability to sort of jump and fly through the air. So that's sort of the game mechanic of it, is you're just sort of traversing these environments. There's not a lot of danger until you get to sort of the end of the game, where there's these creatures that are sort of trying to search for you and kill you or whatever. But you don't have any way of fighting back. Like, the only thing you can do is sort of traverse around the world. You can hide from these things. But the really cool part of this game is there's this sort of drop-in, drop-out, cooperative multiplayer thing, where you'll just be running along, and all of a sudden you'll see somebody, like, in the distance, who looks exactly like you. And the whole conceit to this is that this is another person playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no way of communicating with you. You have no way of communicating with them. There's not, like, voice chat or anything. All you can do is, there's a little button that you can press that sort of lets out, like, a musical note. And, mm-hmm. like, the longer you hold it, like, the louder the sound is. And so you sort of end up, like, trying to get their attention by just, like, pushing the button a bunch of times. Or, like, if you guys both, like, get through the same sort of puzzle section together and, like, solve the puzzle, like, at the end, you'll both kind of, like, do, like a long note that's sort of, like, almost like a high five in whatever this world is. But there's nothing communicating to you, or there's nothing telling you that that's how you should communicate with the other person. Like, you meet them, and you sort of form your own way of communicating with them. You don't know who they are. Like, there's just some random person who's playing the game with you. And so by the end of the game, you've shared this experience with this other person. Like, I played the game, and I went through pretty much the entire game with just this one person. And it gets to the point where, like, you get to, like, a tough section, and maybe the other person, like, didn't make it, like, missed a jump or something, so they have to sort of make their way back up. And you find yourself, like, waiting for this person, because you don't want to get, like, ahead of them. Like, you've experienced, like, this entire game together, so you want to experience the next moment together, too. And I don't know, I just, you don't ever experience that in a video game, I don't think. Unless you're playing with somebody that you know, but then you have like this sort of this out of the game friendship that you can draw on. You would never do that with like a stranger in like a first person shooter or something. You'd be more likely to shoot them and then go teabag them, and then like yell something racist into your microphone. So I don't want to talk too much about this game because if you listen to any like video game podcasts, if any of our audience out there has listened to these podcasts, they've pretty much talked at length, you know, as to what this game is about. But and they've kind of talked about the same thing I talked about with this sort of shared experience with another stranger. But I just wanted to bring it up because I played through the entire game, which is like only an hour and a half long, but definitely well worth the $15 that it costs. So if you're out there and you have a PlayStation 3, don't think twice about getting this. Just go out and buy it, because it's really probably one of the most unique experiences I've ever had. So,
cool. I actually had read a really short article about that game, like, maybe 2 weeks ago or something, and I almost sent you a link to it. I was like, I bet Kyle would like this. And then it looks like it's a really... I don't know why I got tripped over that, but it looks like a really beautiful game. Like the
art style
is like really simple, right? But
yeah, it's like, I mean, it's pretty much all like desert or sand themed. Like the sand in it is like really amazing looking. I know that sounds stupid, but it has a real sort of artistic look instead of like a realistic look. And that, yeah, I think, serves the game a lot. Like, the main character doesn't look like a human. It looks like... I mean, it's human-shaped. It has, like, two arms and two legs. But the legs are sort of, like, pointy, like, angled. They're not... They don't look like legs. There's, like, no feet. The person is dressed in what looks a little bit like a burqa. So there's just, like, sort of slits for the eyes, and that's the only part of the face that you can see. And the eyes are kind of glowy. Instead of there being, like, pupils and irises and stuff behind there. So it's a really stylized look, and it really does look amazing, and that's part of one of the things I think that that makes you sort of want to share that experience with somebody. Is like, what are we going to see when we, you know, crest this hill, or what are we going to see when we look around this corner? So
yeah. Is there's this game on Xbox called Limbo. Is that on PS3 also?
Yeah, it actually just came to PS3 a couple months ago, I think.
Yeah, that's got the same... It's not the exact same thing, but all the artwork is basically your character's a silhouette the entire time. And I think maybe you see, like, his eyes.
Like, yeah.
The white, and then... But everything else is pretty much just black and gray.
Yeah, I was super jealous when this game came out exclusively on the Xbox... couple years ago, but yeah. Fortunately, yeah, it came out on the PlayStation like half a year ago or a year ago, and I played it, and you're right, it has this really cool art style, silhouettes and like sort of grayish backgrounds. Like it's almost entirely in black and white. There are a couple sections I think that have a little bit of color.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a really cool art style to it, and the gameplay is pretty unique too. There's not, like, you don't have weapons or anything. It's all sort of puzzle-based, but if you fail a puzzle, you die.
Yeah, and the death is sort of, like, even in the silhouette black and white, it feels really gory, even though it's really simple.
Yeah.
I hate those brain-eater things that land on your head.
Oh,
I've never
yeah.
played it, but I've watched Josh play it. It's one of the games that, like, there are very few games that I'll, like, sit there and watch somebody else play, but that's one of them.
It's, that's actually really cool because later on in the game, there's like a part where you have to let one of those attached to you in order to get past one of the puzzles. So yeah, that particular mechanic in that game was really cool, especially the way they turned it on their head at the end of the game. So
yeah, so now I'm jealous of the Journey game.
I thought about just like I didn't want initially I didn't want somebody else to be there and like sort of ruin the exploration for me, because I'm more of a single player kind of person. Like, I like to go through a game and I like to experience it at my own pace. Mm-hmm. And I like to sort of explore every nook and cranny, and I was afraid that if somebody else was there with me, that there would be this sort of expectation for me to follow them or for them to follow me and not play the game how I wanted to play it. And that happened for like the first 5 minutes, but then after we sort of solved the first puzzle together, from that moment on, like, I didn't care about really the, like, exploring every single detail in the environment. It just became about this sort of shared, like, yeah, we're going to get through this together and we're going to get to the end. And then there's like this really sort of poignant thing that happens at the end too, that, I will admit I teared up a little bit at, which also doesn't really ever happen to me in video games. So, so yeah, it's just really cool. If you have the chance to play it, you should definitely do that.
I have to put a PS3 on the baby registry.
Yeah, along with our frozen yogurt maker.
we're definitely moving toward a healthy lifestyle.
if you guys have like a baby shower, I'm going to find a way to get that audio to the baby shower and play it for everyone during the unveiling of your soft serve frozen yogurt machine. Okay, well, we got wildly off topic. Let's take a quick break and we'll get back and finish up the show. You guys have been listening to Taekwondo and the Shame Chronicles. We'll be right back.